Every day, Bill Frank...
We're going to be doing one thing and one thing only.
...talks with the best guests in America about business.
You mean business?
Monkey business?
Are you ready to get down to business?
All right! Everybody's here and that means we can get down to business.
Entertainment.
Entertainment.
The entertainment capital of the world.
What kind of entertainment?
It's a storm of entertainment that brings down the house.
Sports.
Game on.
A grueling test of strength, speed, and stamina.
Wow, just like in the pros.
And the local community.
The rage in local radio.
Find out what's going on locally.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time now for the Bill Frank Radio Show on News Talk 1520 KVTA. Now, here's your host.
Bill Frank.
The Great Recession of 2007 to 2009 refocused many people's relationship to money and redefined their financial goals. It goes without saying that the average person's attitude towards debt, retirement, investment, and living a comfortable lifestyle changed during this period. But in what ways have these relationships changed? Joining me to discuss this is a financial expert from Merrill Edge. She'll share with us the exclusive findings of a Merrill Edge report from September of 2013 that shows how Southern Californians have changed their attitude towards money from even as recently as their last survey in the spring of 2013. Carrie Mofassesian is Vice President Market Sales Manager for Merrill Edge in Northwest Los Angeles and Ventura. She's part of a team of financial solutions advisors that delivers comprehensive financial services to Bank of America customers. Carrie advises clients on college savings, retirement, and general investment strategies. Before joining Merrill Edge, Carrie worked for consumer banking at regional banks in Ohio and at Wells Fargo in Los Angeles. Carrie holds the Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor certification from the College for Financial Planning. She holds a BA in psychology and a minor in business from Bowling Green State University. Joining us from the Los Angeles area. Hi, Carrie. How are you today?
Good morning. How are you?
Terrific. Thank you so much for being our special guest here on the Bill Frank Show. And I want to start with a big overriding question, if I can, because we're standing on the precipice of one of the greatest transfers of wealth in all of human history, as baby boomers' parents die and the boomers' husbands die as well. And as we look at this phenomenal event, women are going to be inheriting most of the world's assets for the first time in world history. Even as these women come into this great wealth, though, few of them are prepared to manage the money. Your survey was interesting to me because it showed conclusively that women are more conservative with their money and probably more practical about what they're going to need when to outlive their husbands. So what opportunities and what challenges are there for educating women to manage the money that they will inevitably inherit from their parents and their husbands?
So it's very interesting. There's going to be trillions of dollars of money moved over the next 10 years. And it's interesting that women's approach to financial planning is a holistic approach, whereas men typically seek a higher rate of return above other priorities. Women clients I work with tend to be really aggressive at actually saving overall. So they do a great job of really getting themselves on a savings plan, stocking that money away consistently, and so that's a great thing. However, they tend to be more conservative when it comes to their actual portfolio of investments. So they may need some of that extra savings to meet their goals over time. And when I sit with couples, really try and make sure that both of the parties are engaged and have an equal say and understand what's going on. I had an incident not that long ago where a client came in and her husband had passed away. And she said, I need some money to take care of his final expenses. And I said, well, what role have you played in making the financial decisions since you guys were married? And she said, well, I usually took the statements and I put them on the desk in his office. So that spoke volumes to me on how much we need to, as advisors, really get the conversation with women going sooner and make sure that everyone does have a clear picture of what's going on, because if something does happen, you want to be able to step in and that not be another stressor in your life should something unfortunate happen.
That's where surveys like yours come into play, because you really get a real glimpse into what Americans, and in particular Southern Californians, are thinking. Now, you did a survey. It was of 1,016 Americans with investable assets between $50,000 and $250,000. And the survey, I thought, was filled with some remarkable findings. For instance, you found out that Southern California women plan to save about $1,010,000 for retirement, while we men plan to save only $814,000. So to what do you attribute this about $196,000 difference between what men and women think that they're going to need to save for retirement?
So I think one thing is a realistic expectation around the cost of living. You know, we do live in Southern California where there are over 260 days of sunshine per year, and I think a lot of us are very realistic on what it takes to live here and that it does cost more. Also, I think that the female life expectancy being longer comes into play. So if you have a couple and they both reach 70 years of age, there's a 50% chance that one of them will live to 92. And statistically, that happens to be the woman in most cases. So I think a lot of people have seen this happening and understand the statistics, and a lot of women really need to get in there and save, and they understand that they do.
What about aggressiveness in investments? Do you find that men are more aggressive when it comes to women in terms of their investment profiles?
It always varies, but overall, women tend to be more conservative. They tend to be more aggressive at their actual savings. And men tend to value a higher return over other financial priorities, such as, you know, maybe stability in their portfolio.
So men, if you want to generalize, will be willing to take more risks for that higher return, the trade-off between risk and reward?
Yes, if you'd want to generalize.
Well, there were so many findings in the survey. I also thought it was interesting that Southern California respondents anticipated saving $377,000 more today when they did the September survey than they did just 6 months ago. I also found it interesting that these same respondents have only about $150,000 saved towards their retirement. So that leaves a big gap. If you're a man, that leaves a gap in your mind of about $664,000. If you're a woman with those higher expectations, that leaves a gap of about $860,000. So I guess there are two parts to this question. First of all, why do respondents believe that they need to save more money today than they did just 6 months ago? And then second, what are some of the ways that these respondents are going to make up these differences that we just talked about?
So I think to answer the first part of your question, I think a lot of it has to do with uncertain costs of healthcare, as well as the fear of outliving your assets. So that's two things that I think are really taken into consideration. And then, you know, how will they make up the difference is it's all about competing priorities. So are you supporting your children? Do you have a home that you're trying to pay off? Do you have your parents that need some care as well? So I think that all of those competing priorities are really what folks need to look at, and that goes into planning. You know, are you willing to cut daily expenses? Will you vacation in San Diego or in the Caribbean? And, you know, are you willing to work longer to help out the people in your life and to eventually meet your end goal?
All right, I want to come back and challenge you on one of the parts of your answer that you just gave me, Carrie, and that was the fact that you said that increased concern about health care costs. In a six-month period, why would somebody be more concerned about rising health care costs than they were, say, just in March of this year?
Well, I think with the health care exchanges opening recently, that may have something to do with the fact that they see a volatility or some change, and that brings it to the top of mind. And what will it look like when I retire? So I think that event, whether you think one way or another about are they good or bad, brought healthcare to the forefront of people's minds.
Good observation. My guest is Carrie Movsesian. She's with Merrill Edge, and we're talking about the findings in their recent survey here in Southern California. Carrie, another interesting factoid that I saw in the survey was 72% of Southern Californians are looking to actively grow their retirement nest egg in the next 12 months. But that compares to 77% nationally. So to what do you owe this lower percentage of respondents in Southern California compared to the rest of the nation?
You know, I think both numbers are encouraging. And what I do see is clients in real life, in real time, with those competing priorities. So I think more people are trying to meet a variety of different goals in Southern California as opposed to maybe other parts of the country where they may have their mortgage paid off sooner, or, you know, they may not be supporting their children so much, or their children may not be living at home. But I do overall think it is an encouraging number.
Well, it is encouraging. I'm glad to see that Southern Californians and people across the United States are looking to get more aggressive with their investment strategies. It's a sign that perhaps the economy is turning around as well. Carrie, another interesting fact that I found, that 64% of Southern California respondents intend to retire later than they first anticipated. And this was a big increase. That was an 18% increase since the spring of 2013 report. What is this telling us about investment strategies and saving for retirement that people are planning to retire later than they once thought?
So I think at the end of the day, that number gets pushed as you get closer. So it's very easy to say you'll retire at a certain age and then reach that age and be scared that you may not be able to have enough to live the lifestyle that you want to in retirement. So I think it sounds nice that you'll retire at 55 or at 59 or at 66 or whatever your goal is. But when you get there and you realize that you may have 30 years of life ahead of you, I think that is one of the major factors that causes people to push back, as well as recent housing instability, market instability. And although your investments may be where they need to be, you don't know that there won't be another market downturn, and that might affect you and scare you and prolong that time that you feel you need to be in the workforce.
Well, Carrie, that's interesting. Embedded in that answer, then, is the realization that these people that are looking towards retirement probably haven't saved as much at an early age as they should have in order to reach those goals. So talk to me about the importance of starting early and building a retirement plan from a very young age.
Starting early, nothing can make up for those years. And it's interesting when you look at Gen Y as a whole, they seem to see the struggles that their parents have had, and they tend to probably be less reliant on the public sector as an option. So they've seen what their parents have gone through and some of the struggles they've had, and I think it's had a significant impact on their outlook. And I do see them as a whole really wanting to get started sooner. I recently spoke to a class of students who were about to graduate in 2 months, and they were nearing the end of their semester, and their professor asked them, what was missing from your 4 years of education? And they said financial literacy. And so the professor had asked me to come in and cover topics, simple things like budgeting, responsible use of credit, and starting that retirement account early. And it was just an eye-opening experience for all of them, most of whom now have gone on to set a plan and goals and monitor their progress. So, you know, they're on top of their situation, it seems, and really hungry for knowledge as well as tech savvy. So that allows them to be more on top of their financial picture on a daily basis.
Whoa, Carrie, though. You bring up Gen Y, and it's always a favorite subject of mine, this difference between the generations. And I found some very interesting and frankly, some amusing findings in this last survey as regards to Gen Y. You did the survey 6 months ago, and these Gen Y respondents that you surveyed believed that they were going to need to save $2.5 million for retirement. 6 months later, another group of Gen Y people, that number had been reduced down to $822,000. That is a big differential from just 6 months before. You look at that and then compare it to the amount of money that Gen Y people have started to put aside already, which is somewhere, according to the survey, around $50,000. What do you owe this, the diminished requirements of Gen Y between just 6 months ago and now, going from $2.5 million down to $800,000? And more importantly, how are these Gen Yers going to bridge the gap?
I think that this is their first experience with investments. So I think learning and adjusting along the way is really what they're doing. You can put into a calculator, you know, and get a one of our financial tools and get a large number that you may need for retirement. And I think that that number may seem overwhelming, and adjustments made accordingly have skewed that number down. I think it will be different moving forward in the future as Gen Y as a whole gets a better understanding of what their priorities are and how much they may need in the end.
Talk to me about then the risk appetite that these young people have. I mean, what is the risk appetite among these Gen Yers after they witnessed what happened to their parents and their grandparents during the Great Recession?
So they're all very aware of the ones that I've talked to and who come in to seek financial advice, obviously, are pretty savvy. And they understand that they're going to have to weather several market ups and downs. They're one group that comes into adulthood that is really aware of this. So I think they understand, and what we try and do is educate as far as, you know, you may need to pay off this debt first, but let's get you started with, you know, your first job's 401k and how can we maximize that. And you may want to go a little more aggressive because look at this long, long time frame. I mean, who knows when some of us will retire who are younger. And quite frankly, you know, the risk appetite needs to be a little more aggressive if they're comfortable with it, because they can withstand the market ups and downs to come.
My guest is Carrie Mufsesian. She is with Merrill Edge. And Carrie, in an earlier answer, you mentioned that a professor brought you in to talk to a bunch of Gen Yers in a college class. And I found your survey was interesting on this point as well. It's almost a paradox to me that the survey found that 92% of the respondents think that parents and grandparents should teach financial literacy. Yet only 44% of the respondents get their financial information and their guidance from a financial advisor. That compares to 40% nationally, and 35% here in Southern California get it from friends and family, compared to 28% nationally. So doesn't this seem a little bit incongruous to you that people, 92% of the people that you were surveyed, felt that parents and grandparents should be teaching it, yet you were brought into this college class to teach basic financial literacy, number one, and more importantly, why do Southern Californians in general rely more heavily on financial advisors than we do in the rest of the country?
I think it's interesting that 92% of those surveyed believe it's the parents' and grandparents' responsibility, and I think the reason for that is that 58% of them, over half, feel this way because they had to learn how to manage their finances through trial and error. I think that that's interesting. And when we're talking about the 44% who get their financial advice and guidance from a financial advisor, I think that advice and guidance is very different from the financial literacy that should be taught to children. So for children, you're going to teach them that, you know, instant gratification on a certain item they want to buy might not be the best choice, and they can save for something a little longer term, as well as just a general understanding of that you don't spend more than you make and you need to save. So I think that's a little bit different. I think when adults, 44% of local adults are seeking financial advice, that's an entirely different type of financial advice. You're going to have, you know, all of your retirement, possibly market exposure, as well as massive debts if you're taking on a mortgage. So I think that is the main reason why they do. And as far as your family and friends, that can be a great secondary check.
Right. My guest is Carrie Movsesian. Carrie, among the people that you advise, what are some of their top financial priorities?
So top financial priorities for baby boomers, say, are really outliving your assets in retirement and healthcare. So we talked about that a little earlier. But as far as Gen Y, they're worried about getting started. And, you know, the younger people really want to get started, as well as a lot of them. Up to 50% of the mass affluent baby boomers we surveyed are okay with their kids living at home. And people see that as a bad thing sometimes. I see that as a possibility of Gen Y prioritizing getting their financial house in order before they leave the home. So is it okay to live at your parents' house for a couple of years while you maybe pay off that debt? They may have helped you in school. Now they're even helping you more by letting you live at home, where you can get on track with paying down your debt and getting your credit in order, and then savings and getting that emergency fund for a lot of people across the board is a huge financial goal we see, and one that's sometimes overlooked. So 6, 9, 12 months, if that's what makes you feel comfortable, of an emergency fund is an absolute must, and I encourage everyone to do that.
My guest has been Carrie Movsesian of Merrill Edge. Carrie, you've given us a lot of good information. If you've piqued the interest of some of my listeners, they want to learn more about you, learn more about Merrill and Merrill Edge, where would you direct them to go?
We have bettermoneyhabits.com and merrilledge.com. Both are great resources and offer everything from budgeting tools to brokerage accounts. And then if you'd like to seek professional advice, someone such as a Merrill Edge Financial Solutions Advisor can provide you with one-on-one personal advice and guidance and get you on the right track to meet your financial goals.
Carrie, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.